ebook publisher and marketing service company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents. Get behind me. Now, stay there. Your favorite fun-filled, informative art and entertainment podcast. Available on iTunes, PRX, Podbean, and right here locally in the great Pacific Northwest on KSKQ 89.5 FM Ashland, Oregon. Art and entertainment news and views that you want to know. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audio Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $9.99 per month. And be sure to check out our wonderful book rental program, Fantastic Books for People on the Go. That's downpour.com.
On this episode, Italian band Rockstar Frame releases their debut album, Rock and Roll Mafia. Everyone loved the old television show Full House. The cast is back in the next generation version, Fuller House. We hear from co-star Michael Sun Lee and the plot against America in our downpour.com special feature right after the news you want to know.
All my life, I've been waiting for a good time, a good time.
Hello, I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
I'm Kayla Elrod.
Hi, I'm Sean Mark Nipper.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world.
Anybody ever been to Coachella?
I can't afford that.
The music festival?
Yeah, no, but I wanted to. I would love to go.
Way too many people for me.
Every year I want to go. And as much as I want to go to Coachella, I got to tell you about this. I want to go to this even more. So the group that organizes Coachella has booked the same venue for October 7th to 9th of this year. And listen to this lineup. You ready? Okay. Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, Roger Waters, and Neil Young and the Who. So it will be the first time ever that Paul McCartney and Bob Dylan have played on the same stage.
What?
Can you believe that? I know, those guys have been in music, you'd think there'd have been a dozen events that they'd have been at the same time. But no, they've never actually shared a stage together. So this is going to be huge. I mean, Coachella is great. I mean, it's a big festival and everything, but this is it, man. This is like winning the lottery.
My goodness.
I want to go so bad.
At first, you know, when it first came out, you know, Jerry's right, it was like a rumored thing, but then all the bands have confirmed they're all going to be there. Given the I'm not surprised about McCartney and, you know, about the Stones, because they always tour, you know.
And every year it's rumored that the Stones are going to play Coachella, and they never do.
Right. And this time they're going to, right? But I was really surprised, you know, the Who, they're on their final tour. That's their 50th tour. They're like, hey, we're done. It's 50 years. We're out of here. But they signed on immediately. I was surprised about Bob Dylan. As Jerry was saying, you know, he's never played with McCartney before, which is ironic because one of Bob Dylan's best friends was George Harrison. And they wrote a lot of songs together, and they were in the Traveling Wilburys together. But so Dylan was more of a friend of George's than he was of, you know, Paul and John, because they were the main songwriters for the Beatles. So they didn't, you know, it makes sense that for him and Dylan to get together, because they... You know,
I saw Bob Dylan right here in Medford at the Jackson County Fairgrounds one year when he played with Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Seriously?
I saw Dylan open for the Grateful Dead back in the East Coast 25 years ago. And I saw The Who during their 25-year reunion in 91 out on the East Coast.
I think this is going to be a pretty amazing festival, frankly.
Yeah. Well, Coachella knows how to really dish out some interesting stuff, because at the April one, For this year, the surviving members of NWA, they reunited for the first time in like 30 years. So wow. That was Ice Cube and Dr. Dre. And so Coachella knows how to really make, set records.
Oh, and this year, Guns N' Roses?
Guns N' Roses was the headliner.
Yeah. The original lineup of Guns N' Roses.
Original.
Yeah. I got to tell you, that guy, Axel, you sent me something. I watched him do an old AC/DC song.
Right.
That's why we were
that
late.
That guy That's still why we were has late it. Getting in here. You know, I was giving him crap for all his facial, you know, non-recognition that's going on for me right now. But I got to tell you, if he's going to front AC/DC, if that's going to happen or whatever, I'm in. That's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I was showing Jerry, you know, the Axel came out, right? And I saw this, and you know, there was all these rumors that he was going to, you know, take their lead singer has suffered a hearing loss. So his doctor told him, you can't tour anymore, you're going to go deaf. That's just, you know, the ABCs of it.
Or he was kicked out of the band.
And then the band, you know, said, we're going to tour, and they needed a replacement, right? So they looked around, and they wanted, you know, Axl Rose to do it. He was already on tour with Guns N' Roses, but he said, I will go on tour with you guys when we finish, you know, if you want. He goes, you know, he would be really honored to do it. And so when they asked Angus Young, you know, why Axl, and, you know, he goes, because he's got the stage presence and the voice, mm-hmm. you know, that is just fits this band perfect. He goes, no one's going to be able to, besides Brian Scott, who's their singer, and he goes, no one's going to put it out the way Axl's going to. And he goes, if you don't believe me, just watch him do it. And then, you know, Sean, you saw that.
I did. Like, I was impressed.
It's not like, you know, okay. Van Halen get back together. I mean, David Lee Roth was good, but he was not vintage David Lee Roth. But Axl Rose came out there like he was still 20 years old.
That's funny. I was just thinking that it's like, you know, there's always those, you always have those debates like, you know, David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar or, you know, was it Bon Scott or Angus Young? Like, this is really going to throw a kink in it because now it's going to be, you know, Angus Young or Axl Rose. I mean, that's tough because you're right, man. I watched that and I was blown away. What a great fit it was.
Watched it until the very, very end.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the way he ends it, you know, he ends it just like, you know, like he used to do with the Welcome to the Jungle. You know, he was like,
yeah.
And then it's like, you know.
He's dancing, too.
He was dancing. He's got the long blonde hair. He looks like, you know, he just came out of the
80s.
Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, all these last past 20 years or so, you know, he hasn't toured and he hasn't put anything out and he hasn't gone out with Guns N' Roses. He spent most of his time in Sedona meditating and just doing what he wants to do.
I don't see him being a meditator. That's
well, you know what? It's funny because, like, in interviews with him, he just says that. Yeah, he goes, I go to Sedona to get grounded.
Okay.
You know, he goes, because I don't like being around people. He goes, and when I was younger, I had a lot of antics where I would get upset. Mm-hmm. And he goes, now I don't do that. And he just felt the time was right. And with AC/DC thing, you know, he said, he goes, I'm only going to finish the tour for them. He goes, I'm not going to sign on. We're not going to do an album or anything like that. Oh, they asked me to do it, and I said I would do it. As soon as he finishes up the 26-city tour with Guns N' Roses, then he goes on the tour with AC/DC, mm-hmm. which will start, when you hear this recording, it will have already started. And he's going to tour the world with them, and that's, you know, then.
No, are we allowed to play a clip from Axl Rose?
You know, as a matter of fact, you know, for our listening audience, you guys just listen to some of this and enjoy this.
Wanna tell you a story about a woman I know. Oh, come to love it. My sister steals the show. Exactly pretty, ain't exactly small. 1, 2, 3, 9, 56. Here it is, he got it all.
When he hits that, it's like when people sing the national anthem. We're waiting for them to hit that one line and nail it. And Axl, absolutely. I mean, I'm so excited.
Yeah, you know what?
It's
trippy because I saw him. You know, everyone's really anticipating Guns N' Roses getting back together again. You know, because they're older, you know, and, you know, most singers, you know, start losing their voice, right? Their high voice goes down low. This guy has not lost it. And when you see him come out for Coachella, the first song they did was Welcome to the Jungle, and he did it just like he did the original one. He came out there, he stood on top of the amp, and he goes like, do you know where you are? You know, the jungle, baby.
That thing. You know, it's funny. I am constantly surprised by the way people, like, we get to know a celebrity through their work, right? And we kind of pigeonhole them sometimes, like, oh, this guy's this or this woman's this or whatever. And Maya was telling me a story about somebody I had no idea about, really kind of blew away my perception of her as a actress and a person.
Yeah, well, not everyone knows it, but Reese Witherspoon, she has emerged as a really powerful tastemaker in the publishing world, helping to influence what's becoming popular. It's an interesting history of how she got interested in it. She has always been a huge reader. She started at the age of 4 years old, and her grandmother would read to her from novels, not picture books. It got her hooked. And the love has continued since then. So fast forward to her career in Hollywood now, and Witherspoon was getting frustrated because the screenplays coming across her desk had like one bland female character after another. It was the wife or the girlfriend, and they were nice, respectable, and boring. So she was really drawn a lot more to the protagonists of the novels and the memoirs that she curled up with at night in reading. So she ended up deciding to turn those books into movies. And 5 years ago, she co-founded an independent production company called Pacific Standard with director Bruna Papandrea. And it has been behind films such as Gone Girl and Wild, which started off as bestseller books. And then they sniffed these books out and grabbed them before they were even published. Together, you know, those two films earned 3 Oscar nominations and grossed more than $500 million. So they know how to go for the good stuff. So the company really now is a big player. It has 26 projects in the works. 16 of them are based on books. There's thrillers, women's fiction, biographies, young adults, and a lot more. And what I like is they feature strong, complex female protagonists in the roles of judges, criminals, warrior princesses, and Wall Street traders like that. So Witherspoon said, I'm on the crusade to find a dynamic female character, whether she's likable or not. Likable puts women in a very small box. And I loved that. So she has a really popular Instagram account with almost 6 million followers. And when she loves a book, she posts an artistic photo of it, and it can rocket the Amazon rankings right up, turning some into bestsellers. So I really am impressed by the influence that she has. It's inspiring to know that she took that passion and is turning it into this.
You got more power than Oprah, then.
Yeah, well, you know.
Hey, don't say that.
Oprah. Sorry, Oprah, you're still in charge.
Sorry, Stedman, we didn't mean that.
Yeah, I take it back. I didn't mean it.
You know, the thing about Reese Witherspoon, you know, is like she filmed here in Wild in Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole town came out to see her and stuff like that. And then she's always been, you know, a very popular actress. You know, I mean, you know. She kind of got pigeonholed with the Legally Blonde things, you know,
in
the beginning, because such a beautiful woman, you know, and all that stuff. And, you know,
and it's hard to get that image out of your mind. Just this, kind of girl. Ooh.
Yeah. But then when she came back, and she won the Academy Award for playing, you know, June Carter, the Johnny Cash story.
Mm-hmm.
Again, right. With Joaquin Phillips.
Walk the line.
And she had brown hair in that one. So,
yeah. And, you know, so you saw the depth of her as an actress, but then, you know, as Maya just said, when we found out about this, I was like, you know, she, you know, like the old saying, you know, not just another pretty face. I mean, she's really, 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 you know, very intelligent. I mean, you have to be very intuitive. You know, Sean, you're a filmmaker, you mm-hmm. know, and it's like you get a lot of projects and you're like, what's a good vehicle for me and stuff like that. I imagine it would be even tougher when you're, you know, a superstar movie actress, you know, because you're going to get, you know, all these cheese, you know, cookie cutter, you know, cheesy movies that they want you to make because, you know, they're going to make a lot of money at the box office, you know. But so, you know, hats off to her where she said, no, you know, I'm going to go with stuff that some of the stuff she's not even in. Like Gone Girl was a huge success. She wasn't even in the movie.
Right.
And she directed it.
Well, I like the fact that she is not just sitting around waiting for her agent to find her work, but mm-hmm. she's going out. She's entertaining herself because she loves to read, but then she's finding some really quality things, like Maya was saying, that have a statement and that she can identify with and are very entertaining as well, and being behind it instead of waiting for, you know, the lottery balls to drop.
That's what I loved most about this story.
What are the things that she have coming up?
Well, we have a date this Friday. And
oh, okay.
I got kicked to the curb. So,
oh my goodness.
One thing, another piece of this that I liked is Witherspoon has also invited some authors to adapt their own books, which is, she's hoping to bring new voice to film and television. So I think she is pretty influential.
And that new voice being like these different female characters?
Among others, yeah, just, okay. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Mike. An example would be like Shawshank Redemption. Everyone's seen Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, man.
It's a great movie. It's got a great dialogue. Stephen King wrote the book. Right. He also wrote the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
It's fiction. It's art. Why not?
Yeah, and then the thing, too, is that people often judge what was originally a book and then turns into a movie as it has to be like the book instead of judging the movie as a separate entity. Mm-hmm. And that's where it gets tangly.
Yeah, but you know what? You're right about that, Kayla. Because, like, you know, how many of us, and I know we all have done this, like, you see a movie and you go, yeah, the movie was good, but the book was so much better.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you read the book first, you know, and then obviously you read a book like movie Papillon, right? I read the book when it first came out, right? It's a great book. It's a true story. The guy who, you know, Papillon, he wrote it himself, which was kind of an amazing story, too, because the guy wasn't a writer. You know, at the end of his life, and somebody said, you know, you should write down your memoirs. It was such an unbelievable story. He wrote it down. He gave it to the publisher. And he goes, here, see if you can make something out of this. They didn't change it. They said, it's perfect.
Nice.
You know, but then when the book, you know, was so detailed about, you know, and it was so long, and then they made the movie, and when they made the movie, you know, they changed the characters. I mean, they used the same characters, but they changed scenes. Like, you know, this guy went over here when he in the book he didn't, you know, so that they could, everything would just like mesh together so they could tell it in a 2-hour format.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so when you see the movie, you're kind of like, no, that didn't happen. You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's actually happening to me right now because I'm listening to Game of Thrones on Downpour.com, the little app I have on my phone. And it's being read by Roy Dotrice, if I'm saying that right. And that guy is amazing. The voices that that guy can come up with. But there's so much that happens in this book that is not in season one.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it. I'm really enjoying listening to the, well, I mean.
Well,
I
you know, as a comic book fan, we've learned to just accept that. Like, you know, Civil War is coming out, the Marvel one.
Right.
It's got so many things different than how it was in the comics. But it's a different format. When you go from book and movie, you're not the same thing. And it's like a book. I think people need to look at it like a book is your source material.
Yeah.
It's your starting point. But, you know, you can't convey on a movie the same things you can in a book. You can get more nuanced, you know, by the use of dialogue, things that you can convey in a movie, you know, visually that you can't in a book. So it's like they're not the same thing. You know, what, do you want me to stand up on the screen for 6 hours and read you the book? I can do that. But that's not what movies are.
You'd have to stand up for 33.75 hours on this
book. Right, exactly. You know, and speaking of,
is that going to be too much?
A little bit.
I'm going to need a bathroom break at some point.
I do have a face for radio, as we've all agreed. So nobody wins in that scenario.
I'm out of popcorn. I need some.
Speaking of movies,
Jerry, check this out,
okay,
man. You know, because what Sean made to think about Game of Thrones, right? You know,
right.
The books are great; they're just fantastic.
Yeah, Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, you know, the series is great too. You know, it's just really, really good. Of course, it's caught on, like, and everybody knows about it. You know, not everybody has seen it, but you know, everybody knows
what it is.
Right, and so like this new season that just came out. You know, and I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this. You know, but the guy who writes the books,
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah,
he's behind.
They are now, the screenwriters are writing all the stories and all the plots.
One of the shows I love on YouTube is Epic Rap Battles of History, and they...
Epic Rap Battles of History.
Yeah, exactly. George R.R. Martin versus J.R.R. Tolkien. My favorite thing was like, Tolkien's like, you ripped me off so much you even took the R.R. from my name. Virtual dating.
A virtual dating thing.
I think it
already. I have.
Do you get virtually laid at the end of it too, or do you actually?
Hey, you know what, Sean? I think people have been doing that for a lot of years. Even before there was TV.
Who's going to buy dinner?
They wanted a virtual magazine date. You know?
Yeah. I'm just going to have a virtual salad.
What are we talking about? Axl Rose? A whole lot of Rosie?
My boyfriend lives in Korea. We've been really intimate.
Well, who?
We've never seen each other in person.
Well, you could go on a date with a 62-foot dragon, you know? Like, you could have your part. I mean, we already lie our teeth off when we go on first dates anyway. Why not look like somebody else, too?
Well, yeah, like, you know, the first date is usually like a job application, you know?
Exactly.
So, you know.
How would you pick your date?
Maybe Tinder?
Yeah, like Tinder, exactly.
I think Tinder would work.
Maybe.
Hey! That's an idea. I didn't think about that.
You can have as many as you like, Charlie.
Okay, cool.
Tinder offers a scholarship to a student booted from her sorority because of her dating app. Like many students in the university, Shannon Workman has an account on Tinder. But she had to learn the hard way that being on a popular dating site was against her sorority's human dignity rule.
Ooh.
Dignity.
Oh, what's that? The dignity. The third-year student came under some fire after she was spotted wearing a Chi Omega sorority shirt in her profile picture on the site. The Chi Omega officials said that the pictures are promiscuous or risque in nature and that they would require a personnel meeting. Workman told Good Morning America that she was so humiliated, but she was also smart. She was called into a disciplinary meeting, and Workman secretly recorded the proceedings.
Oh.
And what did she get? She got them capturing the sorority officials calling her disrespectful and requesting a membership revocation. She then refused to take part any further in the disciplinary actions, telling the board, "I'm never coming back." And Tinder took note. Upon hearing about the incident, the company reached out to Workman to offer her a full year's scholarship to cover her final year of school, so she was a third-year student. "We think what Shannon did sends a very empowering message to the young women and college students, which is actually one of the Tinder's largest audiences," Tinder co-founder and CEO Sean Rad told BuzzFeed that you shouldn't conform to let people tell you your beliefs are wrong just because it's not the same as their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And right. In addition, they offered Workman a paid internship with the company. "It's the first time we've reached out to someone whose story has inspired us and asked them to be part of our team. But her actions showed depth of leadership and courage that was admirable, something we value as a part of our company culture, and we always want to stand up for our users who stand up for us." While Workman hasn't made any firm decisions on whether or not she plans to take the internship, she's thrilled that the company reached out after hearing what happened to her, and I think that it's absolutely amazing. "I do stand up for Tinder," she says, "because I think that is there's nothing wrong with it. Some people who use it for hookups, I don't. I just think there's a lot of the great things that happen there through Tinder."
Slow clap for Tinder.
Yeah. You know what? Clap for the whole plan, man. That's great. You know what? Here's the thing about Tinder is that if you guys remember, you know, I would say like 10 years ago, I mean, it was like almost, you know, unheard of, all these dating sites, Match.com, you know, Harmony, or all these, you know, things, right? And now there's like, a dating site for every demographic. You know, there's, you know, like, you know, the old folks dating site, you know, young folks dating site, the hookup dating site.
J-Date for Jewish community.
J-Date, you know, Jewish date, every category, you know. And now it's like, you know, statistics in America, you know, it's like 48% of the marriages in America all started with online dating.
Yep.
Are you serious?
Because it's a real safe way to meet somebody and get to know them, as opposed to going into a bar and you don't know. You're just going to, you know.
Yeah. Are the personals in the newspaper?
Remember, you know, when the dating sites first started, you know, they would say, because you know, like Jerry was saying, you know, your first date is like a job application, you know, and people always lie and they say, yeah, you know, I was in the Olympics, you know, yeah, and that was pretty cool, you know, I was
professional shot putter.
I was a shot putter, and I also
it was never televised though, so you can't look it up.
Yeah.
And then you meet up with
saved
a goat,
a dozen dogs from a dog.
That was, you know, that was me. I saved, you know, 1,000 Dalmatians from burning alive. You know, that's the whole thing, right? And when the dating sites came out, you know, everybody get on there, right? I know this woman. She was telling me, she goes, does the online dating thing and stuff. And I go, yeah, you know, you believe all this stuff? Because everybody seems to have the same story, you know, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's almost verbatim. It doesn't matter who it is or where they live, you know? And then she goes, yeah. She goes, what I started doing when the guys would ask me out, you know, she was like, you know, let's hook up or let's meet or let's have a drink or we're going to go to a movie or something. She goes, I always told them, let me see your Facebook page, you know? And because I said, why do you do that? She goes, because if you go on somebody's Facebook page, you're going to know a lot more about them than anything, because you're going to see who their family is, how they interact, what they know what to do.
They're posting
they
pictures
like,
of themselves naked with a 40. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this is how I look at it. The dating, and I've been out of the dating game for a long time, but this is how I look at it. Dating is, and up to marriage, is like a round robin tournament in basketball, right? Because you have all of these layers. You know, the first layer is just introducing yourself and getting them to go out with you, go meet somewhere, right? And then you go out with somebody and then you talk and you find out, you know, that she's a psychopath or he's, you know, he collects Legos or whatever, like something. Okay, they're eliminated. You go on the next date. The thing about online dating, I look at it, is basically has eliminated the first round of the tournament. You're one step closer to that victory because of online dating, because you can find a person that already meets your basic criteria. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you have a hobby in common or you have the same career path or something like that, it's like you can eliminate the whole messy part of the first round, you know, because you've already got that from the online. I mean, you still got to do the rest of the steps and win the rest of the games, but at least you got that. It's like getting a first round bye. That's how I look at
it. So no more churches and no more produce aisles. We can just go straight to swipe and right. Or left, depending on, right? Because I thought when you're in the vegetable aisle, you're really getting to know somebody because you can say, okay, that person's a vegan, or they don't mind, they're a carnivore, they're going to get that, you know, T-bone steak. I don't know if I want to date that person if that's what you're into. Crickets. Okay, crickets.
That
got dark really.
They want to be forgiven. So this is, I'm just saying, this is great because now you can, like you said, you can skip that
now
point.
Now you could do both. Don't you agree, Holly? Yeah, go to the produce store. If you see somebody you like, great. You think the old natural way, right?
I agree. And I only went to, you know, I only went to college for a short time, but apparently it's the Chi Omega, just in case you want the right.
Are any of you
it.
On Tinder?
I've been thinking about it.
I don't even know
Tinder.
What it is.
Have you guys?
Kayla's got a great story.
I know it's swipe left or something like that.
I monitor the Tinder Reddit subreddit, so I get to see like the best of what people post. You know, it's hilarious.
I don't even know how Tinder works.
Basically, you take a picture of yourself and you have a bio, just a quick little bio thing. And then when you're on Tinder, let's say you and I are both on Tinder. If we're within a certain distance, whatever I said is my acceptable distance, I will see pictures and little bios of everybody that's also on Tinder that's in my area. You know, if I'm looking, a man looking for a woman. Yeah, geographically. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say you're downtown and I'm here, right? And I'm say within 20 miles. And then all I'll see is the picture and the little bio. And I can either swipe right or left. If I go left, I think it is, it means you're not interested. And if I'm right, it means I'm interested. Now, if you see my picture and you also swipe right, we'll get connected through the Tinder app. So we both agreed that we thought the other was good looking or something about the bio attracted. And now you use Tinder's app to communicate. And then if you want to take it to the next level, you can actually exchange phone numbers. But it's a safe way to talk because you're not giving away your personal information or your phone number or anything like that. So that's why I watch the Tinder subreddit. I love it because one of the big things is a lot of guys like puns. They like to do puns with people's names. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite. So it's a way to kind of like break the ice. But it has created this entire subculture of like, okay, well, now you've gotten the first round out of the way. Now how do you get them to communicate with you? It's pretty funny.
Can you see who has rejected you?
No.
Oh, man.
Oh, if they reject you.
Were you going to go and find them and reject them,
like,
too?
If somebody swipes like left on you, they'll never pop up on your phone.
Yeah, because you said, okay.
No, right, because they already said they're not.
What if you accidentally swipe left and you're like,
can you take
wait.
It back?
Dude, I know. I saw a story from a guy who accidentally did that. Or it was a girl. She accidentally swiped left on this guy. She was going too fast. So what she did was she created a second account and was literally going through every picture in her area trying to find this guy because she could never get him back on hers. She already
dear Craigslist,
left.
Missed connections. Oh, I swiped left and I didn't mean to.
That's part Where of are you? Love after you know that? Like, is there more to the
I don't
story?
Know. The story was never continued.
You know, Holly, this is trippy, man, because you're like, you know, Tinder, right? I was watching a cop show on, you know, like a detective show, like Law and Order. It wasn't Law and Order, but something more current, right? It was on TV. It just came on, right? And there was this thing, and there was like these two detectives. It was Chicago Fire, I think it was, or Chicago PD or whatever. And they're trying to find this guy, right? And they know that he's on Tinder and stuff like that. And so there's a female officer and there's a male officer, right? And so they're like sitting out there and they go, she has to get a date, you know, to meet, go into this bar, like go undercover, right? To, like, where are you going to get a date? I can't take you or any of you guys because you're cops and you look like cops and you act like cops, right? And he goes, well, man, go on this Tinder thing. So she's on this thing and she's like swiping things. She goes, nah, I arrested this guy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Pay attention to this, though. Guess what James Cameron is doing?
Going to the moon.
Close.
He's going to do a remake of Titanic.
No, but good idea. He is making 4 more Avatar movies.
Wow.
Whoa. It sounded funny. It sounded like you said 4.
I did say 4.
Oh, okay.
4 more. Okay, so Cameron announced at CinemaCon and later shared details with the publication Famous Monsters of Filmland that he plans to go into production on all 4 Navi films, but at the same time.
Why not?
At the same
Let's
time.
Let's just do them all now. Yeah. Let's just bust them out.
He says that they'll be shooting it like a mini-series. Essentially, they'll be shooting across all Avatar scripts simultaneously. So, for example, on Monday, they might be doing a scene for movie 4, and Tuesday, maybe doing a scene for movie 1.
Nice.
nice.
Yeah. He also explains that the release dates for the upcoming Avatar films had to be spread out, so you can expect them in 2018, 2020, 2022, and 2023. So this is a work in the making, but he's doing that specifically because he's avoiding competing with the various Star Wars movies and spinoffs whose release dates have been mapped out practically into the next century. So Cameron actually said, I don't want to go head-to-head with Star Wars. That would be stupid.
Yeah, you know, another thing. When I you know, read this article, you know, about him making all four movies at once, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, two things came to my mind. Sean, you're a filmmaker again, so, you know, you would understand right. this. I'm like, well, you're shooting all four films, you know, and they really rely heavily on, you know, they were groundbreaking at first, Avatar, right? And the technology that they use, and they filmed everything in 3D. You know, and so like they have special cameras and everything. So if you make all four, you're cutting yourself out on what the new technology might be down the road.
Good
you
point. Make them.
But the real underlying factor, I think, is what, you know, Johnny Depp, who, you know, is a real good friend of all of ours. You know?
Oh, yeah.
and he will be here at the Brit for everyone out there locally listening on KSKQ 89.5 FM. Your community radio station. They will be at the Brit, the Hollywood Vampires. And, but you know, when they asked Depp, you know, he makes all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, right? He was being interviewed on a TV, and they asked him, you know, like, this new movie coming out, right? And it's like, you know, it's like, you don't age, dude. What's the deal? You know, he goes, you know, you look the same. You look great, you know? And he goes, well, because I want to be honest with you. And the guy goes, what? He goes, we filmed them all at the same time. You know, he goes, when they came to me and they said, would you do the first two? He goes, I was down with it. And then he said, we wanted to make, you know, two more. And he goes, I'm only going to do it if we film them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the reason for that was because he said, you know, I'm not going to make a, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow movie when I'm 60 years old. I'm just not going to do it, you know. But if they shot them all at once, so he does look the same all the time, like he doesn't age.
He's a wise
So
pirate.
Everyone in the Avatar is going to look the same too.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about this about a year ago. Maya, wasn't it you that was telling, when they were talking about three scripts at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Remember that? And then they were talking about filming all at once. I remember we did. So now it's four. You know, the funny thing about this, I'll tell you what makes the most sense is, yes, it's very CGI heavy, but there is also a lot of makeup and practical effects and things like that, ships and stuff. And this makes perfect sense that you can do all. It's like, okay, this ship's going to be featured in films, you know, 2, 3, and 4. Let's just do all those scenes and actors too. You know, if you've got like a Jake Sully and he's in 3 movies, we've already got this guy ready. Let's just do it, bang it all out. So it makes a lot of sense. It's ambitious, makes Peter Jackson look like a wussy. Sorry, Pete, but I'll be interested to see if they pull it off. The last thing too about Avatar, you know, it was the highest grossing movie for a long time, and now I think it was beaten, but it's strange because for one of the highest grossing films of all time, it doesn't have like the fandom that a Star Wars does, or you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark or something like that. I really hope that this inspires that, because I really enjoyed it. You know, I mean, I really enjoyed it the first time when it was called Dances with Wolves. But I really think there's a lot that could come from this. So.
No, maybe because it's James. Hard to dress up like a blue Navi creature.
Avatarism was a real thing, though. There were people having like Avatar withdrawals.
Avatar syndrome. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant it's a nonfiction.
Oh, the Avatarism is different.
Really,
it's
real. And collectibles and yes, people, yes, it is hard to dress up like Navi, but it's not exactly easy to dress up like you know, Jabba a stormtrooper either. Mm-hmm. So
I think they took the Sean time off just to really dial in the story, because that's really what's gonna make it through 4 episodes and make people coming back, you know, because that's what Star Wars does. It's about the story. We want to know what happens next. You don't want anybody messing with your story of Star Wars, right? And so that's, I think they took the time off to really, you know, nail it. And you know, James Cameron, how many top grossing movies has he done? Alien, Titanic. I mean, the guy.
Terminator.
Yeah, my goodness, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, here's the thing with the James Cameron movie. When it came out, I remember when it first came out, and I think the way it got such a big following, one, James Cameron was doing it, and everyone loved his previous work. And, you know, at the time, all the technology they were using, no one
Yep.
No one in the film industry
invented it.
Used it. Yeah, yeah, he did invent it. And they, you know, so everyone wanted to see it. Mm-hmm. I watched Avatar right here at the Blackstone Audio Studios. Mm-hmm. We pulled the screen down
and we watched
it here.
25-foot screen.
Yeah. And it was great, you know. And it's like, you know, and then the thing that made it so popular, you know, everyone wanted to see the technology and how it worked. And it, but I think is that, you know, because it was had such a great storyline to it, it just blew everybody away. It's like, you know, seeing a special effects movie, you're like, yeah, I know there's gonna be special effects, stuff like that. And then when you see the story, you're like, I didn't know it was gonna be that good. Because you know what, that movie would have been just as good even if they didn't film it in 3D.
I cried the first time I watched it.
You know, it's interesting is that Pixar is doing a bunch of like sequels now. And years down the road, it takes years for them to make a movie, and the technology definitely changes. So I mean, from Toy Story 1 to Toy Story 3, I think Incredibles is coming out in 2017.
Yeah.
I mean, the technology is so much more advanced, and so it's interesting to see the block figures that they started out with, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and it's just progressing. But you wouldn't be able to do 3 or 4 Toy Story movies at the same time, would you?
You could, but you wouldn't get the desired effect.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is that, you know, like when Toy Story first came out, they, you know, their animation was groundbreaking. Nobody had ever used it before. Andrew was the one that came up with it.
Right.
You know, so that was another thing like Avatar. You know, everyone wanted to see it because they'd never seen that kind of animation and claymation and everything done all at once.
Right.
And then, you know, the just like Avatar, the story was great and everybody resonated with it. So it's just like, you know, yeah, then they, you know, would make more. And there's not, Toy Stories are not sequels. Every story is
self-contained.
It's the same characters with different ages.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's you know, one of those things. The only sequel that he's done is he's going to do Finding Dory.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Man. Yeah,
yeah,
me too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. That movie, that Toy Story blew me away when I first saw it. And when I found out, you know, when I met you, you know, I mean, that was so...
Same way
like that.
It can be entertaining.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, no. They do.
And that's your art and entertainment news.
Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
1, 2, 3, 4. La, 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 la. Whatever happened to predictability? The milkman, the paper boy, the evening TV. Everybody eventually says that they're as lost as you. So everybody shout it together. Hey, don't sell your dreams so soon.
Michael Sun Lee, a co-star of Fuller House in Hawaii Five-O, talks with myself and my lovely daughter, Sarah Stanton, in this interview. It was such a blast doing this interview, and Sarah, of course, is a big fan. When you hear it, you're really going to love it, you know, because you hear it from her perspective. Welcome, everybody, to another just fantastic interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are really privileged to have from Los Angeles... from the new Fuller House, Michael Sun Lee, and he is also known for playing Maui PD Lieutenant Kula on Hawaii Five-O. And you joined the cast of Fuller House starting on episode 9, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, in the episode called War of the Roses.
War of the Roses.
Yeah.
And what is War of the Roses about?
It's about someone sends a whole bunch of roses to the Tanner residence, and no one knows who sent them or who they're for. So the girls, you know, DJ, Stephanie, and Kimmy, try to figure out who sent the roses. And Aunt Becky also gets involved, kind of meddles a bit about who she thinks sent the roses. So we don't find out to the very, very end who actually sent the flowers and why.
Okay, so Sarah, have you seen episode 9?
Yes.
Oh, you have. And how did you like it? Do you know who the roses belong to?
Yes.
Spoiler alert! Who did they go to?
Becky.
Yes.
Oh.
There you have it, Michael. True fans, and they're following your work.
That's a true fan right there.
Oh, my gosh. That is so great. So you were on Hawaii Five-O, right?
Yeah, did a couple episodes of that.
Yeah, I know that you guys shoot in Hawaii.
Right.
And the reason I know that is because a friend of ours has been on the show a couple times, Don Swayze.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Don Swayze. Good
yeah.
Actor, that guy.
Oh, he's a fantastic actor.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's a great gig, man. Great gig. That's actually my hometown, Hawaii. So I was born and raised there, but had to move away in order to go back to work there. You know what I mean?
Right. So now you're in Los Angeles. Where do you guys film Fuller House?
In Burbank on the Warner Brothers lot.
Oh, okay. I would have guessed you guys would film it in San Francisco, but I guess they didn't use the background photos for that.
Yeah, they do. They did some when in one of the episodes they go to the Giants game, and I believe they shot it there. But everything shot in studio in Burbank. So
now, are you surprised by how successful the Fuller House is? Because it's like a Netflix, phenomenon.
I had no idea that people were still fans of the old one when I got on the show. And oh my God, social media was just blowing up, people with questions and, requesting photos and, trying to get me to reveal something that might happen, next season. And I'm just in the dark as anyone else,
Is that right? The writers and the directors, they don't clue you guys in?
The day that I worked, we weren't supposed to post any, on-set photos or anything like that. So it was very difficult not to want to tell people. I could tell people I was working on, and I just couldn't tell them who I played and all that,
Well, now that you're on the series, and you play Harry, right?
Right.
And you're Stephanie's boyfriend, is that correct?
Well, sort of. There's an iconic episode in the original Full House where Stephanie and my character as kids get married in the backyard. Yeah. So it's an episode that was very iconic. And so in Fuller House, they do a flashback to that scene where Stephanie and Harry get married. And the audience, we film in front of a live studio audience, and the audience went crazy.
I bet. That.
Yeah, they went crazy.
So you guys filmed in front of a live studio audience, so we could actually get tickets to go see you guys perform.
You can. I think the website is tvtickets.com. I think it's called tvtickets.com, and you can get tickets to, I think, that show and other shows. If and when I do get to be on season 2, I'm sure I can find out and pull some strings for you.
Beautiful, beautiful. I know you'll be on season 2, because you know, I'm listening to, the girls, Sarah, and it's like, when I had mentioned to her, I said, hey, I guess it's going to be on our show, and I told her, that Michael was going to be on the show that you were going to be on from Fuller House. She goes, I love that show.
Yeah. it's a good show. It's a really good show.
So Sarah, tell Michael what you like about the show.
I like that they brought it back, even though it's really old.
Yeah, we're ancient.
But when you watch it, Sarah, does it seem like it's old to you, like it's dated, or does it seem like it's in today's atmosphere?
Today, mainly because of all the electronics.
Oh, you know what? I just picked up on that because you guys are all using electronics now, right?
Exactly, and all the appliances in the house is all updated, But everything pretty much looks the same. It's just a 2016 version, Because the show debuted in 87 to 95. So what is that? 29 years?
Right.
87. Oh my God.
But you know what? When Sarah just made that point, and it dawned on me, it's like, yeah, everyone's walking around using a cell phone, which obviously you guys were not using, when the shows, first came out. There was no cell phones.
Yeah, and everyone, grew up. The original cast, they look great. I mean, I got to meet almost everyone except Bob Saget and Dave Coulier, but everyone who I met, they look great, man.
Yeah? Is John Stamos really that handsome in person as he appears to be on TV?
He's more handsome in person, unfortunately. Sickening, I tell you.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, my God. You are so handsome.
You know what? And I bet that was the first time he's ever heard that.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
But all of the people from Full House, have all gone on, to have, just really, fantastic careers on their own, yourself included,
Yeah, I know. It's almost a blessing, and to see them, you know, thriving as adults, healthy and looking great. You know, they all look great. I was just they look the same. They just look older and great. You know what I mean? They don't look run down or tired or.
Yeah, they look healthy and happy, right?
Yeah, and they work so hard. You know, they work so hard. You know, because.
Now, is Stamos, yeah. Stamos still complaining about his hair, you know, every 10 minutes?
No, he wasn't. he did rush over from his other show because he's shooting his own series also called Grandfathered. So.
Yeah, I've seen that. He's really good in it.
Yeah, he's a producer on that and on Fuller House. So I was only able to work with him one day because, he just comes in, shoots his thing, and he leaves. So. That's how talented he is. Like, he can just come in and, you know, deliver and then go on to his next show, you know?
You know, I've interviewed a lot of actors in the business, you know, and a lot of them, I would say 75% of them say, yeah, you know, I really have to prep for this. I have to get in character, this and that. And then there's about 25% that just say, you know, I read it and I'm ready.
Yeah, and he was very, you know, he was very flexible. You know, very, he came in and he was like, I need my lines for this. And he kind of just went with it. You know, he was just a joy to work with. I mean, it's like what you see is what you get. You know, when you see him in interviews or on TV, he's just as charming and funny and, you know, humorous as when you see him, you know, in interviews or any role that he plays.
Yeah, and that's really refreshing, you know. And I sense the same thing with you. Is that, you know, it resonates, you know, with the viewing audience, to, you know, all of us, you know, whether you be a, you know, teenage girl or, you know, an older guy, you know, that when you see people acting, and one, you like the show, and two, you see them and they make you feel like you're part of the family, which I think is a huge part of the recipe for the success of Fuller House.
It is. I think, you know, that cast really felt like when they started shooting Fuller House that they picked up where they left off, you know, like almost no time had passed. At least that's how it seemed to me, you know. I think that attributes to the success of the show, you know. And I think the writers do a really good job in entertaining the fans of Full House and entertaining the new generation of Fuller House fans.
Which is perfect, because, like, you know, like Sarah, you know, I watched the Fuller House, the new one, and, you know, of course, you know, I saw the, you know, the originals when they first came out. But here's something that, you know, we can bond over, you know, that, you know, even though there's a huge, you know, age difference, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And what else is doing? What other show is doing? Girl Meets World. I don't know if Sarah was alive during Boy Meets World, but now there's Girl Meets World.
Have you seen that, Sarah?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, and what'd you think?
I've also seen a couple of Boy Meets World.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I was a fan of Boy Meets World, and then when I heard that they were going to do Girl Meets World, I'm like, wow, that's a clever idea.
Oh.
I want everyone to watch out for. I did some secondary voices on an animated feature that's coming out this year. The movie is called Kubo and the Two Strings. It's a stop motion animation by the studio that brought you Paranorman and, you know, Coraline, Laika Studios. That one is a Japanese tale, and it has Matthew McConaughey.
Wow.
Theron, who else? Rooney Mara, they do voices on it. I just did some secondary and tertiary voices. I'm really proud of that one, because that one's going to be really, really great.
We'll be really looking forward to that. You know, and I know a lot about animation. You know, my cousin does animated movies.
Mm-hmm.
And his two brothers, my other two cousins, they're twins, but they do stop-start animations.
I know. It's when they showed us, like, the dailies or the mock-ups of stuff, I was just amazed at what they can do nowadays, you know. If you just Google it or YouTube it, you get to see a trailer of it. It's fantastic.
Right. Well, you know, again, thank you so much for being on. If, you know, you can come back on again and, you know, and let us know about, you know, the animation, when it's going to be released, and, you know, the start of the new season for Fuller House. And again, we've been talking with Michael Sun Lee. And Sarah, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome. I had a great time.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, everybody.
To learn more about Michael Sun Lee, visit us at our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Call me beautiful, so original, telling me I'm not like other girls. I was in my zone before you came along. Now I'm thinking maybe you should go. Blah, blah, blah. I be like, nah, ta-da, ah, ta-da, no, no, no. All my ladies, listen up. If that boy ain't giving up, lick your lips and swing your hips, girl. All you gotta say. My name is no, my sign is no, my number is no. You need to let it go, you need to let it go.
Rockstar Frame bursts onto the scene with their hit single, Cherry Boobs, that has everyone talking. They tell the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton, all about it in this interview.
Welcome, everybody, to a really special interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we have Rockstar Fame on all the way from Italy. And they are just ripping up the charts, man. They have this brand new album out that is just so, so good. And it's called Rock and Roll Mafia.
And this is also Morris here.
Oh, is Morris there as well, too?
Oh, and Lawrence is there, too.
Yeah, we have another one.
All right, we have the whole gang. For all of our fans out there, this is quite a treat, you know, for us and for you as well. Now, you know, I've heard the entire album, and it is just, you know, start to finish great. You know, you guys released the first single was She's Hot, and then you've got a single out right now called Cherry Boobs, and everyone is just talking about it. I mean, here in the USA, man, it's just really, really doing well. That video, I watched the video, and I heard the song first, then I watched the video, and I was just like, wow, these guys are just, like, really, really good. Even though Cherry Boobs might sound like, you know, it's going to be like a real sexy song, and it is a sexy song, you know, but it's got like a real pointed message to it. Maybe you could share that with our listeners.
Faith, il messaggio di Cherry Boobs?
Cherry Boobs was born in a Rio's room when we were playing some music, and I thought, why? we cannot do something like talking about this girl who have cherry boobs. Why not?
Yeah, no, I love it. You know,
cherry boobs. Yeah, because in this world, in these days, the society in which we live has some particular models to follow. So sometimes that's not so right. I mean, I don't know if I'm you have to be confident with yourself, with your body. You don't have to follow.
You don't know.
Maurice is trying to explain Cherry Boobs.
Well, I you know, I love the song, and so upbeat. You know, the message is like, you know, hey, you know, stop stereotyping all women. You know, we come in every shape, form, and size, just like men. You know, you know, I mean, I like, you know, we would all like to be George Clooney, you know, or Brad Pitt, but you know, for some of us, that's just not going to happen. You know? Very cool.
You have to like yourself and yourself.
For all of our listening audience out there, let's go ahead and cut in Cherry Boobs. You know what? That is an amazing song. And I know everyone that heard it around the world is just like, yeah, these guys are good. And you are just going to like shoot to the top, man. Rock star.
Thanks.
It's so cool. you know? So to tell me, you guys are in Italy.
Wow.
Do you tour a lot in Italy and throughout Europe, or do you ever come to the States?
Vi ha chiesto, ragazzi, vi ha chiesto se siete mai avete mai suonato negli Stati Uniti e se volete venire negli Stati Uniti. Uh-huh. A suonare.
Yeah, it would be very very cool.
Oh, okay.
I hope to play in USA.
Oh, we'd love to have you.
They haven't played yet. Never played in the US, but they would love to, of course, because it's kind of where their roots come from. So the of their music. So that's basically what they would love to, because I.
But we love rock and roll, man.
Yeah. Well, you have to think that rocks are framed. Their roots are like Guns N' Roses, and Guns N' Roses are definitely American. So it's more like that type of sound, that and then the hard rock from the 80s.
Yeah, you know, you hit the nail right on the head, man, you know,
because
you know, rock star fame, you guys are bursting on the scene just like Guns N' Roses, like, you know, just like you guys. You know, you guys come out with, you know, Rock and Roll Mafia, and it's just like, bang, where did this come from, man? You know, the heart and soul of rock and roll is back, you know?
Well, I was born with Appetite for Destruction.
Oh, okay. You should get a hold of Guns N' Roses management and see if you can open up for them.
Yeah.
They're going to... Yeah, they're going to reunite the original band.
Yeah, yeah, and with the guys we've actually been talking about it.
Oh, you should, you know, because you know they're going to tour Italy. You know, they could be the opening act in Italy, and maybe go through a European leg with them.
Why not?
You know,
we have to come in US for to training our English.
There you go. Well, you will, you know, and they would love it.
Yeah, well, working on it. Yeah. you gave us an idea, actually.
So let me ask you a question. You know, on Rock and Roll Mafia, there you have 14 songs on there that are just great. You know, let's hear a little bit of Rock and Roll Mafia right now. Yeah, man, you know what? I just love it, man. You know, so here's another question I have for you, because I've been doing, you know, a lot of research on you guys. You guys have so much energy, yeah, you know, in your songs and your videos. You know, I haven't seen you live yet, you know, but, I mean, where does all of that come from, man? You just, like, burst out like a flame. Boom! You know, here we are. Yeah.
Vi ha chiesto da dove arriva tutta l'energia che ci mettete nei video, in generale nella vostra musica.
Well, from rock and roll, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Oh, very cool. What now? Listen, let's tell everybody where they can pick up their copy.
Yeah, rock and roll.
To buy your album, are you guys on Amazon, or are you on Spotify?
Amazon, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and pretty much any digital download outlet there is. And also, there's also the physical album in case they want to purchase it. And it's on the website of the record label, musicarchimedia.com. And actually, the physical album has one more track in it, so it's 15 tracks. There's like a
Okay, because I see I see here I see the 14 songs and so you get the physical CD, you get the 15th song too. Okay, yeah. Man, yeah. It just gets better and better. Well,
great.
Well, you know, this is a blast talking to you guys. I got to tell you, man, you know, and it's always so cool, you know, when we talk to bands, you know, like yourselves, you know, that are just like, you're ripping it up and, you know, then they go on to win the Grammys. And that's happened on our show, you know, the last few years, you know, where we've interviewed bands and then they've gone on and won Grammys in the U.S. and you know, the European, you know, the Brit Awards, you know, and it's just, it's phenomenal, man. It's so cool. And I always ask them the same question. So I'll ask you guys the same question. And maybe they can tell you this in Italian. After you make it huge, which will be very shortly, will you guys come back on the show and tell us all about it?
Dopo che siete diventati famosi, lui è certo che lo diventerete presto, potete promettere che tornate qui in questa radio e raccontate tutto quello, la vostra storia?
Oh, sure. I promise.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
If we
the better American language.
Well,
better English. With very better English.
Yeah.
Well, the next time you guys come on the show, I will try to brush up on Italian, so I can at least ask you one question in Italian. And and speaking of Italian, you know, our show was broadcast around the world, and we have a huge audience in Italy. So, you know, would you guys like to say something to your fans out there in Italy and say it in your native tongue? So they get on.
Un saluto in italiano.
No, ragazzi, a tutti quelli che ci stanno ascoltando in questo momento, tanto tanto rock and roll a tutti quanti. Noi siamo in Rock the Frame e speriamo presto di poter venire lì e spaccare di tutto.
You know, okay, what she said is, hi, we're Rockstar Frame. We're very, very happy to be on this show. And we really, really hope that we can bring our rock and roll to the U.S. very, very soon. And
to learn more about Rockstar Frame and Cherry Boobs, visit our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Plot Against America. In an astonishing feat of empathy and narrative invention, our most ambitious novelist imagines an alternate version of American history. In 1940, Charles A. Lindbergh, heroic aviator and rabid isolationist, is elected president. Shortly thereafter, he negotiates a cordial understanding with Adolf Hitler, while the new government embarks on a program of folksy anti-Semitism. For one boy growing up in Newark, Lindbergh's election is the first in a series of ruptures that threaten to destroy his small, safe corner of America, and with it, his mother, his father, and his older brother.
Alvin was discharged in January 1942. After forsaking first the wheelchair, and then the crutches, and, over the course of a long hospital rehabilitation, having been trained by the Canadian Army nurses to walk unassisted on his artificial limb, he would be receiving a monthly disability pension from the Canadian government of $125, a little more than half of what my father earned each month from the Metropolitan, and an additional $300 in separation pay. As a handicapped veteran, he was eligible for further benefits should he choose to remain in Canada, where foreign volunteers into the Canadian Armed Forces, if they wished, were granted citizenship immediately upon discharge. And why didn't he become a Canuck? Asked Uncle Monty. Since he couldn't stand America anyway, why didn't he just stay up there and cash in? Monty was the most overbearing of my uncles, which probably accounted for why he was also the richest. He'd made his fortune wholesaling fruit and vegetables down near the railroad tracks at the Miller Street Market. Alvin's father, Uncle Jack, had begun the business and taken in Monty, and after Uncle Jack died, Monty had taken in his youngest brother, my Uncle Herbie, when he invited my father in as well. When my parents were penniless newlyweds, my father said no. having already been sufficiently bullied by Monty while they were growing up. My father could keep pace with Monty's prodigious expenditure of energy, and his capacity to endure all manner of hardship was no less remarkable than Monty's. But he knew from the clashes of boyhood that he was no match for the innovator who first gambled on bringing ripe tomatoes to Newark in the wintertime by buying up carloads of green tomatoes from Cuba and ripening them in specially heated rooms on the creaky second floor of his Miller Street warehouse. When they were ready, Monty packed them four to a box, got top dollar, and was known thereafter as the Tomato King. While we remained rent-paying tenants in a five-room second-story flat in Newark, the uncles in the wholesale produce business lived in the Jewish section of suburban Maplewood, where each owned a large, white, shuttered colonial with a green lawn out front and a polished Cadillac in the garage.
The writing is extraordinary, complex, but highly readable, evocative and colored with a tenderness and affection. This is one of Roth's finest books, says O, the Oprah magazine. Philip Roth is one of the most decorated writers in American history, having won the National Book Critics Circle Award twice, the P.E.N. Faulkner Award three times, the National Book Award, the Pulitzer Prize of Fiction, and many more. He also won the Ambassador Book Award of the English-speaking Union, and in the same year received the National Medal of Arts at the White House. In 2001, he received the highest award of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, the Gold Medal in Fiction, given every 6 years for the entire work of the recipient. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Now Stay There is a Just Imagine an Ink presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Ink Studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call us at 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitink.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
I'm Kayla Elrod.
I'm Sean Mark Nipper.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.